And that was just a brilliant remark that you, by the way, just passed by. In a time of uncertainty, what are you certain about? That is something that every single person at this moment in time should take into their soul and just make a list of, wake up in the morning and make a list of the things you're certain about. And I promise you, if you put a little G next to it, every one of them you're grateful for. Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Daniel Burris is considered one of the world's leading futurists on global trends and disruptive innovation. The New York Times has referred to him as one of the top three business gurus in the highest demand as a speaker. Must be, he's delivered more than 3,000 keynote speeches worldwide and is a strategic advisor to executives from Fortune 500 companies. He's the author of 7 books, including his Wall Street Journal, New York Times bestseller, Flash Foresight, and his latest book, Anticipatory Organization, an Amazon #1 bestseller. Now, he's a featured writer. He's been featured on PBS and every other CNN, every other Fox Business, Bloomberg thing you can imagine. He's an innovative entrepreneur who's founded 6 businesses, but listen to this very carefully. His accurate predictions date back to the early 1980s, where he became the first and only futurist to accurately identify the 20 exponential technologies that would become the driving force of business and economic growth for decades to come. His book was called Technotrends. I bought it and read it. I can honestly tell you I didn't understand half of it, but I did read it. Since then, he's continued to establish a worldwide reputation for his exceptional record of predicting the future of technology-driven change and its direct impact on the business world. He's been my friend for a long time. He's here to talk to us today about what's happening right now and what he thinks is going to happen real soon. This is a very important, very, very important podcast for Jen and I. Learned everything from this guy, and I need you to make certain that you stay tuned with both ears.
Yeah, this was amazing. In a time like this, it's important to feed your mind with information and inspiration that can help you move forward in a positive way. And I think that this podcast does exactly that. So take a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the great Daniel Burris. So here's the deal with Daniel, and he falls into our category. The late, great Ayn Rand defined people into 2 categories, givers and looters. Daniel is a giver of the first order, and so are we. And I think half of our connection is how we have been willing to give to each other, regardless of the circumstances, without any expectation of return. And that is a very rare quality in today's human beings, let alone the world. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Daniel.
Absolutely.
Because people tend to loot your intellectual property or your ideas when you're giving a speech. And while you talk very freely about what's going to happen, people try to take it for themselves and often misinterpret what it is that you've said and put people down a different path.
Happens a lot. And I think one of the points you just raised that I think is really good is that I think a lot of people make the mistake of focusing on living a successful life and trying to be successful. And I surely don't think you do that. And I try not to do that. And here's the context for that. Success is all about you. It's about the type of car you've got, the money you make. It's all about your awards and trophies. It's all about the plaques on the wall. It's all about you. Instead of living a successful life, I think a real key is to live a significant life, because significance is not about you. It's about everyone that you impact. And if you can elevate your significance every day, every month, every year, you will find yourself being successful actually by default. So the goal to me is not success, it's significance. And tying this to sales, because I do know there's a lot of people in sales that are watching this. You've been a successful salesperson. What would be different if you were a significant salesperson? What would you do different? How would you act differently? How would you approach things differently? Because if you're a significant salesperson, boom, your world will explode on you, even in a time of the virus and pandemic. So what could you do that would be significant for your customers right now because they're in need?
So is there something you're doing yourself that you can give us an example of that would change in your view of success versus significance?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, right now, of course, we're recording this during the pandemic and things are shut down. And that means people are hurting. Not just our customers, but you have to look at where are the fault lines of society. And the fault lines in this earthquake, if you will, are the homeless, are the people that don't have insurance, the people at the bottom rung, the school kids that now don't have meals. Where are those things? And so getting in touch with the Red Cross on blood drives and how to turn that around, which I've done, getting in touch with, school lunch programs and looking at, how do we deal with that? So that's part of, like I said in the beginning before we started the interview, I'm really busy because I'm looking at, how can we do that? Secondly, I'm calling clients and customers and saying, I know you're hurting. I know your people are hurting. And I've got some ideas for you and how I can help. And by the way, there's no meter running. This is just me because I care about you. And it opens up a Pandora of opportunity to help them. And I believe if you're really helping people and you're stepping up and there's no meter involved because you care, I can't help but think that's being a little more of a significant consultant or speaker rather than just a successful one.
Part of my philosophy is I give value first and then whatever happens after that. So this morning, one of my clients canceled their meeting for this coming weekend, but he asked me if I would come on and give a little pep talk to his sales team. So I spent about an hour and a half this morning kicking the butt of salespeople on one of those Zoom, everybody can see you and talk to you meetings. And no charge, no nothing. He texts me after the meeting and says, can I hire you to do this all the time?
Exactly. And actually, I had a client reach out that I haven't, they've gone through our learning system, anticipatory leader learning system. They had an entire company, which is a global company, go through it. And I haven't even talked to him for 2 years. And I've done some work for him in the past. Again, no contact in 2 years. They're doing their thing. And they reached out and said, can we have an hour of your time with our six top executives to help us deal with the situation? And of course, I said, of course, no fee, no charge, no meter running, happy to help. And will that turn into something? I don't care. And I mean that. I really don't care. I don't care. Why? Because I can't make, I don't know if I can do anything to make my friends or my family or my parents proud of me. The only people that I can control is me. I can do the things that will make me proud of me. So if I do the things that would make me proud of me, I'm going to be okay. And I don't have to worry about everybody else.
Yeah, I've always turned it to my mom, rest her soul. Could you tell your mom what you did? Would she be proud of you? Or would she be kicking your ass down the street saying, what the hell are you doing that for?
The same thing. Both my parents are gone too, but I think that same exact way.
Yeah, I do that with my grandma. Would she be proud?
Jennifer and I were raised on guilt. And that was...
Jewish guilt is a real thing, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I know it is, yes.
The old Joan Rivers joke is the difference between a Jewish mother and a vulture. And the answer is the vulture eats your heart out after you're dead.
I just love it. We're doing is something that's really important now. In a time of fear, in a time of uncertainty, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what are we certain about? And one thing I am certain about is that we don't live in that just a technological world. We live in a human world. And it's about interpersonal relationships. It's about connecting at a deeper level. When even now, we're maybe learning how to connect at even a deeper level or not. We do have some choices.
Yeah.
And that was just a brilliant remark that you, by the way, just passed by. In a time of uncertainty, what are you certain about? That is something that every single person at this moment in time should take into their soul and just make a list of, wake up in the morning and make a list of the things you're certain about. And I promise you, if you put a little G next to it, every one of them you're grateful for.
Well, let me talk a little bit more on certainty then, because I think that rang a chord with you all. Let me, let me take that for a second. So it seems like everything is uncertain, and it was way before the pandemic. I mean, what's going to happen with Greece? Do they have their economy together? Hint, no. What's going to happen with the election? What's going to happen with your stocks? And again, that was before all of this. And now we have all of this. So it seems like uncertainty has been raised up. So in a world of uncertainty, is it only death and taxes that we can be certain about? And the answer is no. We can be certain about thousands of things. For example, can an astronomer tell you in 2035 in March the exact moment we'll have a full moon? The answer is, yeah, they can nail it because they're certain, and we know that. That's, by the way, a cycle. And we know that stocks will go down, and will they go down to zero and stay there? No, they'll go back up, and by the way, they'll go back down again because there's a science of cycles. There's business cycles, weather cycles, biological cycles, sales cycles. By the way, if there's a sales cycle, I like to have the sale completed before the cycle begins. We use cycles to our advantage. However, there's another kind of change, and the economists have never studied it. And that's because it was slow and pokey, and you could be a great economist and not even deal with it. But now it's changing our world on us. And I would call this, unlike cyclical change, with kind of like a pendulum going back and forth, I would call it linear in that it's one way, it's not a cycle, / exponential in that it's going up, 2 becomes 4 becomes 8. Once you get a smartphone, you're not going back to a dumb phone. And once the people in China park their bicycle and get a car, they're not going back to the bike. And once the people in India get refrigeration for their home, they're not going to say, we don't need refrigeration. By the way, that those three examples creates predictable problems that we could either pre-solve or let them play out, which, by the way, are also opportunities. So I have been looking and spending a lot of time with helping people define what we're certain about. And I think, you know, on this interview, my books and my work is around looking at trends, for example. And there's no shortage of trends. And now there's a whole bunch of new ones that are popping up all over the place. For example, in the speaking world, people are saying, well, it's all going to be virtual. By the way, they'll be wrong. And so the key here to being...
Are you certain of that? Wait, are you certain that's wrong?
I am certain. Yes, okay, because good. I'll tell you why. These are principles. Again, I've been doing this for 35 years of actually 36 of in the books and articles of predicting the future. I've got an amazing track record of being right. How did I do that? I leave out the parts I could be wrong about. But the key is, as you said, Jeffrey, there's so much you can be right about if you know how to separate the wheat from the chaff. So what I would suggest to frame up our discussion on certainty and other things is that all trends are either one of two. They're either a hard trend based on a future fact that will happen, and now you can't stop it. But when you know how to identify it, you can see it ahead of time. And then, or it's a soft trend. And if it's a soft trend, that's based on an assumption, not a future fact. And if you don't like it, you can change it. For example, right now, a lot of businesses, a lot of speakers, a lot of consultants, their business has dropped off a cliff. And it looks like it's going to be down for a long time. By the way, that's a soft trend. You could allow it to go down, or you could actually say, well, I'm going to do something about that. I don't have to write it down. I could actually take advantage of it. By the way, a hard trend example, there's 78 million baby boomers are going to get older. You know what? They're not going to get younger. That's a future fact. And is the cloud, we're putting all this stuff in the cloud, is it going to get full? No, it's not getting full. We're going to put more in the cloud. All right, go for it. You have a question, I can tell.
No, I'm 100% on that. The audience should know that Daniel wrote a book called Techno Trends easily 20 years, huh?
1993.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, talk about being ahead of the curve. He fucking created the curve. And I think that you need to look at what Daniel's talking about right now. We call our listeners diehards. What we need you to do, diehards, is take a look at who you are and then take a look at who you want to become. And that's where you need to work based on your own truth and your own capabilities.
Can I add a little something to that?
Go.
Both in my book, Flash Foresight, How to See the Invisible, Do the Impossible, which is about now 11 years old. Whoa, time goes. As well as in my latest one, Anticipatory Organization, there's a point that reflects this perfectly. And that is, it's about being extraordinary. And I've done some study of extraordinary people throughout history. And some were born that way, but most weren't. Most of them at some point in their time were ordinary until they stopped doing ordinary things and started doing extraordinary things. When Mother Teresa was 12 years old, she didn't run around saying, I'm going to grow up and be Mother Teresa and an extraordinary nun. At some point in the beginning, she was an ordinary nun until all of a sudden something shifted and she started choosing to be an extraordinary nun. So my point is, a way to become extraordinary, because I had a CEO ask me one time, how do I hire extraordinary people? And my answer was, they already work for you. You just haven't given them a pathway.
Exactly.
So exactly. I said, all right, so here's what you want to do. Before you give that next sales presentation, stop yourself and ask yourself, what would an extraordinary salesperson do? What would that sales presentation do? Like, think about that, give that one instead. Before asking that question, ask yourself, what would an extraordinary student ask? Ask that question instead. Ask, what would an extraordinary person do in a time of crisis and pandemic? And do that. And pretty soon, here's what will happen. People will start saying to you, wow, you're extraordinary. And you know what? They're right. You are. You chose to be every day.
What I'm hearing you say in that so specifically is that it's a choice. And every decision you make, every question you ask, every action you take, we sometimes take them so naturally and don't even think about the choice we're making by asking that question or taking that action. And what else could we be doing?
Exactly.
I think that by asking yourself the question, you're going to take a different action.
Right.
You're going to take a better action. You're going to double down on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Always ask a better question, you get a better answer. Mm-hmm. And now to just kind of tie into that just a little bit, again, for sales or anything else, the best answer is a question. The reason the best answer is a question is because that question can pull the answer out of you, and therefore it's your answer, not mine. Let me give you a quick example. Several years ago, there was a little kid that I've known all his life. He was outside. I noticed he was crying. And he's normally a happy little kid. And I went out and I said, what's wrong? And he looked up with these big tears in his eyes. And he said, my dog died. And anybody that's had a pet knows they're part of the family. And he's known that dog ever since he was born. And he was all sad. And he looked up at me and said, you think there are dogs in heaven? And I responded by saying, hey, would heaven be heaven without dogs? And he kind of started feeling better and cool. And I didn't say, well, are you Catholic, Protestant, Jew? I didn't say, do you believe in heaven or hell? You see, those are the wrong questions. You see, the answer to your customer, if I want to tie it to sales, or the answer to your spouse, or to the answer to your kid, they already know the answer. There's greatness already in us. We just have to pull it out.
Wow. Yeah. That's so good.
That was a brilliant answer for that kid, by the way.
It's like mic drop.
Should be thanking you. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
he should be thanking you to this day.
So let's go to the future of what's going on right now. You are world famous for accurately predicting the future of technological change. I got that from your one sheet. And you've been doing that accurately for 30 plus years. I think you just said 36 years. That's insane, by the way. Yeah. So what comes next? What does our future look like in this realm?
Well, I think let's start out by putting that question in the context of the situation we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And that is that when you have a outbreak of some virus or some disease, which has happened many, many times, a pandemic is the same as an outbreak, except it's on a global level. So it's another outbreak. And we know how to contain an outbreak, and we know how to contain a pandemic. For example, in China, it was pretty easy to predict that it would get out of China, because when they first had that outbreak in China, they were testing people with their temperature who wanted to fly out of China. And right away, it was easy to know, well, those are people that have already exhibited symptoms. It doesn't mean people that are sick. So there's already tens of thousands that are getting out. So we already know it's going to be spreading that way. But what they did in China is what you do in an outbreak, and we haven't really done here in the US, but I'm going to predict right now we will. You just haven't seen it yet, but we will. So let's just get into what's about to happen and then go a little beyond that. And in China, they basically locked down 60 million people. In other words, stay in your house, you aren't getting out. And they were, and of course, food delivery is how they got their food and supplies. And those guys did okay. Now, the point I'm making is you really got to lock down. And now I think I haven't heard the statistic for like 7 days, but 7 days ago, there were only 15 cases in China because they locked it down. They also knew how many cases they had because they had testing. You may not know in South Korea for way before this happened, if you want to get tested, you pull into a drive-in window, kind of like a McDonald's, they do a swab and then they email you if you have whatever it is they're testing for. So in other countries, Italy and so on, why are they so high? Well, we know. Today in the US, as of right now, if you go to a hospital and get tested, they do a swab, but they got to mail it to Atlanta and then they mail the results back. It takes about 3 days. Now that will change very quickly. Easy to predict. We're going to have testing all over the place. Here's the other thing that's easy to predict. We're going to freak out as to how much it is here because we don't know right now. See, we are reporting known cases. That's because we have no way of knowing who has it. So that'll be another freak out. But here's what we have to keep in mind. Like with all pandemics, and there have been pandemics in the past, like with all outbreaks, and there have been many outbreaks, this too will pass. However, because this is global, and it's the first global one we've had in our modern times, it has economic ramifications that are big. And the quicker we contain here, I mean really lockdown, the less the pain and the faster we're over it, meaning we're not going anywhere. We're locking down. So we're going to get to that. As you can see, every day there's an announcement by the president further locking us down. It's not aggressive enough yet. I mean, hey, we're still flying in planes. We're not locked down. We still got people come back from Europe that are U.S. citizens carrying all the stuff with them. So we are not locked down. We're going to get locked down. And what does that mean? Well, we're going to have to bail out the airlines because we will need airlines. And there are some other services we're going to have to bail out predictably. So you can start to see that. There's going to have to be some more safety nets that will come in and come into play. We will get through this when we're in 2021. We already will be have a vaccine in play. We're going to be through this. We still have ramifications from it. We'll be digging out of the bailout. But you know what? People still need things. Businesses will need to get back up running again. Sales will need to be made. It's still a human-to-human world. People will want, the speaking world, since you brought it up in the beginning, we're going to be doing more virtual speaking, but we're going to find out there's nothing like being there in it human to human is unbelievably powerful. I mean, I've given over 3,000 live keynote speeches all over the world. Last time I was in Beijing, there were 14,000 people from 30 countries, and it was powerful to be there. However, we're also going to be doing more virtual. So a way to see the future is not to think it's either this or this. It's this and this. It's virtual and real. It's are all cars autonomous and like Elon Musk predicted by 2025, all cars will be autonomous. And he's a smart guy when he's not smoking pot on the radio. But he will be wrong. Can you imagine Lamborghini selling a car that you can't control? Hey, it's got nice seats. I've had a Tesla for over 3 years, a Model X, love it. It can drive itself quite well, but I like to drive it because I like to drive. What don't I like? Accidents. So what we're going to do is eliminate the accident part. By the way, 83% of the people in emergency rooms are there because of not being able to changing lanes and not having a good view and all of that. And wow. Right now our cars have features that beep and vibrate and do all this stuff, but really good at ignoring all that. So what we're going to do is make them so that you can't hit the car and pull into that other lane or make that mistake. And we will have autonomous vehicles, but not everywhere. Can you imagine a school bus with no adult on board? I don't think so. So you get the idea. Yeah.
There was a big local article here recently, and I don't know if I got it because I'm in Tesla groups or if it was everywhere, but a Tesla actually did save a man's life because he couldn't see another car coming around the bend soon enough, and his car with all the cameras could, and it swerved him into the next lane. He's like, what's going on? And before he could even like think and process, the car had already moved him. The other car was coming down a one-lane highway the wrong way and would have killed him. And it literally saved his life.
Yeah, there are more and more of those things that will happen. By the way, what we just talked about, the number of people in emergency rooms because of not having those features, will there be an impact? Let me ask you a question. Let's start seeing how good you guys are because I'm teaching you about hard and soft trends. Let's make this a quiz, all right? So
all right.
Will in 3-4 years where we can't have accidents because you've got those kind of features. So if you're driving or if it's driving itself, that won't happen. Maybe we'll have a few accidents, but the number will be drastically reduced. Will this have a major impact on the emergency rooms?
My personal answer is it might have an economic impact on it for the moment, but eventually it will curve back up. A thought came to me of how we're going to cure this whole thing of we need some kind of a graph or chart that everyone can understand. So my idea is to create a toilet paper availability graph and that the world will go up or down based on availability of toilet paper. And we might include paper towels and water. But I think I think as soon as something happens and there's a decrease, something will automatically take its place, almost like by magic. So as we age, my group, the baby boomers, and I'm on the cutting edge of that, the baby boomers will need more emergency help. So I think those emergency rooms are going to be filled with other crap, whether it's gas or an appendicitis or whatever, the high blood pressure, something will happen that will fill that hole.
And you said it's not this or that. It's always going to be this and that. And so I think there will be, just like Jeffrey said, there will be something else. It's just a matter of what.
Well, and that's where I think if we are always reacting and not anticipating, we'll get completely overwhelmed. So not all things can be seen ahead of time. Not all things can be seen. Good, that's why you need to be agile. So let me talk about the two-sided coin of strategy, all right? One side I think most of us understand, and that's agility. And agility is reacting as fast as you can after a disruption disrupts, reacting as fast as you can after a problem occurs. And there are a lot of things you can't predict. Good, you need to be agile. And as a little side note, I was just speaking to the top 50 CIOs on the planet Earth. All of them have over $1 billion IT budget. I asked them a question. How many of you already have an Agile organization? They all put their hand up. And I said, good, glad you're keeping up. And by the way, I'm not putting it down. You need to get better at agility. You've got to be a fast reactor. However, that's only one side of the strategy coin. I've kind of dedicated myself and my work to getting us to the other side of that coin. And that is anticipating disruptions before they disrupt, turning disruption into a choice. Because today you're either going to be the disruptor or the disrupted. Yet if you look at my books and, you know, I've been writing an article a week for decades and all of that, you'll see every disruption that ever happened was there to see, and you have the ability to act on it or not. And and by the way, problems. I've done a survey I haven't released yet, Jeffrey and Jen, but let me just share it with your audience right now. And it's a global survey of CEOs. And this survey was of 1,000 CEOs. And I did not do it via a written document or an email. I did it with phone calls. So in other words, we actually had a conversation. And the question was, what's your biggest current problem? And they would say it. And then I said, now, was that completely out of the blue, or could you have seen it coming and pre-solved it? 93% could have seen it coming, could have pre-solved it. 93%.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. So what does that tell me? Because I'm looking to the future, not the present. It tells me that the biggest problem 93% of the people listening to this will have a year from now, you could identify today and pre-solve or let it play out. What are you going to do?
Try to identify it if you possibly can.
Yeah, do you have a strategy to identify it?
Yeah, exactly. It starts with looking at the hard trends that we know will happen. And there are thousands of them. Again, something I've done in probably now at least 1,500 audiences. If I was really smart, I would have started doing it the very first day I started speaking, but it took a while to come up with the idea. But in every audience, no matter how big they are, towards the end of a speech, I actually have them write down on their iPhone, iPad, their smart device, or on a piece of paper and turn it in, a hard trend certainty they know will impact them 100%, because I've kind of helped them to get it in my speech. And here's the other part that's important for all of our listeners. A trend by itself, who cares? I'm bored, you are too. Unless you tie it to an opportunity. The minute a trend is tied to an opportunity, it bursts into action in life. That's a secret, cool, unbelievably important thing. I can't emphasize it enough. So I've had everyone write down one hard trend and a related opportunity. I collect all those from the audiences, even when they're as big as 14,000, put it together, and then I separate the ones that might be soft in there in case if they didn't totally get it. And then I give it back to them 2 weeks later so that they can do what I suggest. And that is this. And now I'm giving everybody listening to this a suggestion. But it's a real strong suggestion. And that is, 1 hour a week is doable. 1 hour a week, you need to unplug from the crisis, unplug from the present, and plug into your future. Exactly. That's where you're going to spend the rest of your life. Shouldn't you think about it? And instead of thinking it's all uncertain, which will get you into trouble fast, I want you to do kind of what Jeffrey was suggesting in the beginning. And that is, I want a list of things I do know. I want a list of things I am certain about. I want a list of hard trends and opportunities for me and my family or my customers or whoever it is you want to focus it on. And you'll get a giant list. And I can tell you right now that I've collected tens of thousands of hard trends. So if you think there's only a few certainties, whoa, you are mistaken. Thousands of them. You are just beginning that journey. And then remember, you'll have a big list. So in that hour, you need to refine it down to and get rid of all the things you should be doing. You won't do that. Get rid of all the things that you could be doing. Of course, get them out of here. Pick one or two that are the must-dos, your opinion, and then do it. Because here's another principle I'll share. If it can be done, it will be done. If you don't do it, someone else will. So now I'm giving you another sales principle here, as well as a planning principle. And that is, We all have, here's what I want to do, here's what I'm selling you, and here's the cost, and here's the value. But here's the addition that I want to give. But before you make up your decision, let me give you the cost of the no. And I want the cost of not doing it to be dimensional. See, most of us think in two-dimensional. But yet, the world isn't a two-dimensional world. You got to think in three and four dimensions. So in other words, what's the no cost your brand? What's the no cost? And get into the full cost of it. And in today's world of exponential change, you'll find that the no is always way more expensive than the yes, and you'll get a yes.
Yeah.
Secondly,
yeah,
totally. In that sales process, because we're all selling something. Hey, when a baby cries, it's selling something. It wants you to take action. So in that, with that said, if I can tie my sales into a hard trend certainty that you don't need to read a PDF and you know what will happen, and the minute you hear it, you know that's a future fact, all of a sudden you have a powerful way forward, because strategy, whether it's personal or business, based on uncertainty has high risk. But strategy that's based on certainty has low risk and high reward. And I'll give you one more last one, then I'll be quiet and let you ask some questions. And because, you know, I'm on a little roll here, so let me just go one more thing.
We're loving it. Keep going.
Sorry, I can't help myself. It's the teacher in me. And that is, stop giving your opinion. It's actually a big one. Stop giving your opinion. Because if you give me your best opinion, what am I going to say? Thank you. Now look for another opinion before I make my decision. Instead, what I want you to do is to speak in future facts that are undeniable truths, because then it's no longer your opinion. And they will receive it as not an opinion. And then if you tie those future facts into what you're wanting them to do when you give them the cost of the no, boom, it happens.
I don't know whether it was brilliant or just dumb luck, but 20 years ago, maybe a little more than that, I wrote customer satisfaction is worthless, customer loyalty is priceless. And in that book, there's a full page quote that says, it never costs as much to fix the problem as it does to not fix the problem.
Exactly.
And your testimony there was absolutely on the money. Like what we're doing right now, we're trying to fix the problem, because letting it go would be horrible. I'll just say that.
Well, let me give you one more little tidbit on that subject. And that is, again, this is part of what I teach people. And that is, whatever problem you got, that's not it. Hey, you're smart. You would have solved it by now. You're all working on the wrong problem. So if we get down to what the real problem is, every problem is unsolvable. I mean, it took me a while to come up with this, but again, I've been blessed with this ability to solve problems. And I've been with, whether it's with the Googles or whoever it might be around the world, they give me their biggest problems and bingo, and I can come up with a solution. So I don't want to be the only guy that can do this on the planet, because I was put on the planet. I know why I'm here. I'm really grateful for this. I've known it for a long time. I was put on the planet to teach, not to tell. I don't want to be the only guy doing that. That's why I write books and do what I'm doing. So in this case, getting down to what the real problem is, let me give you a little kid example. My niece, Hallie, she said, she has her first job. And she said, Uncle Dan, I got a problem. I can't save any money. And I'm really trying hard to save money, but I can't save money. And I said, well, Hallie, that's because you're working on the wrong problem. Why don't you work at how you spend money? And you'll find yourself able to save. In other words, she was working on the wrong thing. Or another example is they built a whole bunch of new hotels, this chain. Shouldn't mention the chain, Hilton. Anyway, they did a whole bunch of these hotels, and everyone was complaining about the slow elevators. And it's like, boy, fixing that problem. I mean, you can't change the speed of an elevator. That's a multi-billion. I mean, we can't even do that. And it's like, well, then skip that problem. That's not even the right problem. The right problem is this. People are waiting and bored. So what was the solution? Oh, we put a full-length mirror in front of every one of them, and now what do they do? Well, they're checking their code, checking themselves. Oh, gee, it's here already. And they go down, and all the problems went away. So my point being, and I could give you countless examples of what I call problem skipping, but in reality, what problem skipping, there's two elements to it. One is, what's the right problem? Get down to that, and you can move forward. Or secondly, skipping it altogether. And I skipped many problems altogether. I problem skip all the time. Love it.
So I'm going to throw something at you and just my redefinition of it. When I look at the problem, I think, is this a problem or a symptom? And usually it's a symptom. So the guy not returning, you call somebody and they don't return your call. That's not a problem. You blame the other person, but that's not a problem. It's a symptom. Why the guy did not return your call, that's the problem. And if you can get to the why the guy didn't return, then all your calls will be returned completely. So diehards, Daniel Burris is giving you, I don't know how to say it in other than French, fucking genius. And if you don't get what he is talking to you about, problem skipping, or is it a symptom or is it the real problem? You're going to dwell on the problem and be frustrated for the fact that you can't solve it or resolve it. And you need to look beyond it, or as Daniel says, skip it, in order to be able to get to a real solution or a real answer. And it almost becomes an aha. Daniel, you've probably done this 1,000 times. It's like second nature to you now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I've just, like you, you know, I'm just in service of others and trying to find a way to do that. And you are a brilliant guy. It's not the, I'll tell you right now, it's not the books, it's not how smart you are. What won me over long ago was you've got a big heart. And that always wins me over. That's, and by the way, I think actually that's been the key to your success all along.
Well, it so happens that if you're listening, that's not true. I'm from New York and Philadelphia. I happen to be a dick disguised as a nice guy. But thank you, Daniel. I totally appreciate that. Because if you're not giving, then you're doing the opposite. And
right,
I can't,
that's where we started this whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, give and take. But diehards, you need to send some kind of a message to us.
Just DM us on Instagram.
Yeah. And let us know what has impacted you today, because if you're listening, you're impacted. We're going to send this message out. We normally just put it out up on a podcast stuff. We've been very blessed. Our podcast has more than 2 million downloads now. But yeah, I think we're going to do a little bit more. I think we're going to put it in the newsletter. I think we're going to post it on social media. Obviously, we're going to Photoshop your picture a little bit. But I think everything other than that, we're going to be fine.
Right back there. The lighting is so bright in my background. It darkens me up a little bit. Hey, I'm here, you know?
No, this has been phenomenal. No, thank you for taking the time to share with us and our audience. And diehards, like Jeffrey was saying, post a screenshot of this podcast on Instagram, tag us, tag Daniel, and let us know what the most impactful thing was that you heard.
Also, just as a side note, I am posting on LinkedIn. I think I've got 1.3 million followers on LinkedIn because I do a lot of posts of things. And I also have quite a few in other social areas. Connect, join the conversation, and go to burris.com, and you'll find all kinds of resources. So enjoy.
Well, Jen, I'm never at a loss for words, but right now I'm speechless. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, it was great. And one of the things about, in uncertain times, figure out what you can be certain about. that was really profound and something he just kind of glossed over, you know, because he had all these like profound moments that when you take a listen, hopefully you'll listen twice or three times, you can pull them out and just go, wow, yeah, that, you know.
He did not give simply hope. He gave pragmatic hope. And I think that as a diehard, you're sitting there listening going, okay, is this stuff going to come true? Well, he's only been predicting it since the 80s, and so far he's right. Is he 100% right? Dude, no one's 100% right. But he gave us today, me, Jen, and all of you diehards, actionable information that we can use to keep our families together and use to turn into money.
All right. So, diehards, tell us the part of this episode that impacted you the most. Screenshot it. Screenshot the podcast. Tag us on Instagram. We want to know where you or what inspired you the most.
I'm telling you, I would have to tag the whole damn thing, but.
All right. You can limit five things.
But here's the thing. He glosses over brilliance.
Yeah, no, he really does. All right, make sure you're following us online because we're giving lots of value, videos, messaging, inspiration during this time. If you're attending Jeffrey's live stream on Friday and Saturday, March 27th and 28th, it's going to freaking rock. I'm super stoked about it.
It'll be in the show notes for there for you. And I also do a morning free Facebook Live at 10 o'clock East Coast time, where I try to kick you in the ass as much as I possibly can and spread the attitude virus, the positive attitude virus.
Yes. So you can go to attitudevirus.com to sign up for that mailing list and make sure that you don't miss a video. We send out a recap and the video every single day.
Can you believe it? At this time in the world, attitudevirus.com was available and we bought it.
I know. It's pretty awesome and you own it.
Crazy. Okay, so diehards, me and Jen have, we're in separate rooms.
We are. If it seems a little delayed, it's because we are socially distancing ourselves since I was traveling last week and we're taking precautions to just be safe. But we are feeling great. We hope you are feeling great. And we will see you online.
And wash your hands.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gittimer.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and give some value to other people in this time that they really need it. And when the recovery happens, they'll remember what really happened. See you soon.